It's the Healthy Woman Show on WJR with Marie Osborne and Dr. Jonathan Zaden. Presented by Women's Excellence. Now here's your host, Marie Osborne.
Dr. Zaden, here it is March already, and it is Endometriosis Awareness Month as well as Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. Very big topics for us today.
Great. I mean, we're at a new month already. We're getting past the winter here, and it's amazing. So we got a lot to talk about today, not only in screening, but also in what we do the most, which is endometriosis. So I think it's going to be a great show.
And we're going to give our listeners the latest in not just diagnosis, but in treatment and where people can get the right information for both of these very big topics.
I think the most important thing, right, that we have to think about as a patient is why we have to explain the why on why people are getting screened and why people are coming to the doctor. And if we can do that, I think that people will know a lot more and ultimately do a lot more for their own health if they know why they're doing it.
Stay with us here on the Healthy Woman Show as we continue on WJR. As we said at the start of the show, we've got two very big topics to discuss today, endometriosis as well as colorectal cancer. Dr. Zaden, let's start with endometriosis. I know this is a topic you're passionate about. A lot of your patients, we've discussed it here on the show before, talked to your patients about it.
Absolutely.
This is a complex problem with some very new therapies and a lot of new hope for women.
Well, I think that it's been an underdiagnosed problem for a long time. And, you know, I'm starting to see more and more articles. I see in my own personal practice and at Women's Excellence, we see a lot of people with endometriosis, but I think that's because a lot of people are referred to us for that disease. But I didn't realize, even myself, even though I read the literature all in all, that it's kind of trending more towards people saying that potentially in the premenopausal age group, 1 in 10 women may have endometriosis. I hadn't even thought it was that high, just because I'm in that subset of getting referrals from all over, from multiple different sources. But the truth of the matter is the literature's starting to pan that out.
So let's talk about what endometriosis is and the signs and symptoms of the disease. So what is endometriosis? Let's start there.
Endometriosis is when the lining inside the uterus grows outside into the pelvis or into some what we call ectopic location. So that could be anywhere, right? There's even been some weird case studies that there's endometriosis in the brain or in an elbow.
Really?
And in the upper abdomen on the gallbladder or on the bowel. But in most cases, it's limited to the pelvis. So, you know, most people will see it right behind the ovary. And then also around the bladder, and maybe even in between the rectum and the vagina on the inside of your pelvis. So what happens each month is that this is an inflammatory disease. So that lining that normally grows in a woman's uterus and then prepares for a pregnancy, and then if they're not pregnant, sloughs off and winds up in a menstrual cycle, that actually grows, stabilizes out, and then sloughs off inside the abdomen, so it doesn't come out, and the body sees that as something that it needs to fix, some sort of inflammation. So it sends a bunch of inflammatory mediators, which is why we see so many people that take non-steroidal agents such as ibuprofen, Aleve, Advil, Naprosyn, all these things that people buy over the counter and really max out on, because each month that inflammation load is getting higher and higher because it keeps getting worse and worse over time.
I'm going to just stray for 1 second, because when you talk about the cells can go all over, I mean, doesn't that sound like cancer? I mean, somebody like myself was, wow, that sounds like it could be cancer.
The difference between endometriosis and cancer, and I tell a lot of people that when I see them, is that cancer is an invasive disease that ultimately takes over the organ. Endometriosis is an inflammatory disease. So it can actually injure the organ by causing a significant amount of inflammation or scarring around the organ, but it doesn't typically invade into the organ.
Now, you said earlier that 1 in 10 women, you've looked at the literature, you think it's pretty high, 1 in 10 women between the ages of 15 and 49 could be diagnosed with endometriosis or likely have the disease. Those are the reproductive years for so many women. So that just complicates matters even further for women.
The the hallmark of this disease, right, is everything that really is uncomfortable for a woman, right, especially at that age group. They get irregular bleeding, painful periods, and then sometimes pain with intercourse, and otherwise just an overall bloating and feeling tired. Because inflammation causes fatigue. If your body's fighting a disease process nonstop, you start to get more tired and just more lethargic. And so at that peak time in your reproduction, that's the worst time to have this disease, right? Because you're so busy. You've got kids and everything else that you're taking care of. And if you haven't had kids and your body is going through all that inflammation, we believe that that may be one of the reasons that people don't get pregnant as much. Even if their tubes are open, everybody thinks the endometriosis blocks the tubes. But even if they're open, sometimes the inflammation maybe overwhelms the body so that they just don't become pregnant. The body's smart. If you are not in a healthy homeostatic balance, typically reproduction gets halted.
Let's talk about the delays and the misdiagnoses in this area of endometriosis.
I think it's more just a function of the fact that a woman with endometriosis doesn't typically look abnormal, right? And so as much as we talk about biasing, you know, in the United States and in the world, we all do it, right? So if we see someone that looks healthy, we presume that they're healthy. But everybody knows at some point somebody who was really sick and you saw them just 3 or 4 months before and you can't believe that they got so ill so quickly. But endometriosis is that thing that happens in those same types of people that look healthy. But think about it. They're in typically between 18 and 40 years old.
Prime of life.
Yeah, that's
right?
Where people look the healthiest too, right?
Yeah.
So as a whole, I think oftentimes people are considered whiners. You know, they're considered like those patients that we just don't know what to do with, right? And they don't typically look into it because one of the hallmarks for the disease is symptoms without any other findings, right? So maybe they even went the extra step to get an ultrasound or to get some laboratories, but a lot of those things will be normal. And so I think that's the really big delay in diagnosis. And once they're seen and evaluated and treated, it can be complicated to treat them. But the biggest step is to know you have those symptoms and then get evaluated for them.
So when we talk about endometriosis, we know that it causes pain and other problems. So endometriosis growths, you say, are not benign. They are benign. They're not cancerous.
They're absolutely, for clarity, for our listeners.
Absolutely.
Not cancer,
which is the good news, right?
I don't want our listeners to, light up the phone lines here.
No, absolutely. But they can still cause a lot of problems. And what do patients tell you when they come into the office? I'm trying to get at the issue of pain and how difficult that can be.
I what they typically tell me is that they're frustrated, that they've usually had the symptoms for, 2-3 years, maybe more, and they continue to feel worse over time. And then sometimes they're ready to get evaluated, and then they feel a little bit better for a month or two, and then it gets really bad. And then ultimately, when I ask them, hey, how were you a year ago? And they're like, well, I'm much worse than I was a year ago. But sometimes that, the symptoms aren't necessarily linear. So it's not like January it hurt 2.2 out of 10, and then February it hurt 2.4 out of 10, and March it hurt 2.6 out of 10. It's more like a function of, some periods are just horrendous, and some periods, are tolerable. But in most cases, people have used what I call splinter remedies to try to help them. They're either changing their activities during that time period, they're taking more medications over the counter to help with things, or they're changing their birth control pills or some hormonal regimen from their doctor multiple times. But the problem is, it's not working.
Right. And ultimately, they're still having to deal with the pain. The scar tissue, can you talk a little bit about what that is and how it forms and all that?
Well, if you think about, Marie, if you think about your skin, right, and you cut your skin, you see there's a difference in the way it heals, right? Well, the skin on the outside of our body is keratinized, but the skin on the inside isn't. And that's what when you get a cut on your outside, you see a scab and then it heals. Some people heal differently than others. We've all seen raised scars on people or so forth. Well, on the inside of the belly, it's not a keratinized tissue, but it still has, when it's subjected to inflammation, it still has a tendency to congeal together. And when it congeals together, organs that have that inflammatory process on them or endometriosis on them can kind of congeal together. The problem is that they don't just, it doesn't separate when the inflammation is cleared. The organs have a tendency to stick together. So the tube could stick to the ovary could stick to the sidewall of the pelvis, and then ultimately the back wall of the uterus. And before you know it, we call it as doctors a frozen pelvis. It's the one thing I look for all the time when I do my first initial exam, I look at the patient, I talk to the patient, examine them, and I determine whether the pelvis is mobile. If the pelvis isn't mobile, we know that we're probably dealing with advanced stage disease.
We are talking about endometriosis with Dr. Jonathan Zaden here on the Healthy Woman Show. And we'll be right back. When we come back, we want to talk a little bit about managing endometriosis. Stay with us. Again, it's the Healthy Woman Show on WJR. We're back with Dr. Jonathan Zaden. You're listening to the Healthy Woman Show here on WJR. As we said in the beginning, this is Endometriosis Awareness Month, as well as Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, and we're tackling the very big topic of endometriosis first. Dr. Zaden, I know we went through a lot of the diagnoses and what endometriosis is in our first portion of the show, but I also found in reading a little bit about endometriosis that this can cause other serious problems, that it's linked to other health issues that I had no idea could possibly be connected to endometriosis. Can we go over that a little bit?
For sure. I mean, most of them are inflammatory in nature, right? And so we talked about the big one and the one that people talk about so much in one of the ways that they enter our practice, which is infertility, right? I mean, you know, they can't, it's unexplained infertility, but they're getting these symptoms and they have endometriosis. But also there's a lot of other inflammatory type things. You know, there's things like allergies and asthma. There's a bladder condition called interstitial cystitis. That is a big one with endometriosis, where people have inflammatory bladder pain because of a decrease of the lining inside their bladder. We're not exactly sure why that's the case. We think that it's a little bit of a combination between people that maybe have this inflammation also decrease some of the activity of their cellular at the cellular level inside the bladder. And then there's all these autoimmune diseases such as multiple sclerosis, lupus, and even some sort of subclinical and clinical hypothyroidism. So I mean, there's a lot of things. And then people that have pain, you know, in the pelvis also have a tendency to have more, you know, chronic pelvic pain, fatigue, and even fibromyalgia. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that are associated with endometriosis, and sometimes that's how we find it, you know. So we'll find people that are diagnosed with GI disorders and so on and so forth, and they can't really completely put their finger on what it is, and then they get referred, and then, you know, we'll do our evaluation, and when we finally go to laparoscopy, we'll identify that, you know, some of their bowel symptoms was actually endometriosis.
Is that how it's diagnosed, is with the... through endoscopy, is that what you said? I want to make sure I said it correctly. No,
I said laparoscopy.
Laparoscopies.
Yeah, but laparoscopy is nothing more than just is an endoscope, but it's an endoscope that we put inside the abdominal cavity.
All right, so is that how it's diagnosed definitively? Is it by doing that?
That's really the definitive diagnosis, either with laparoscopy or, you know, if you were to Google, you might say laparoscopy with tissue biopsy. But if you're an experienced surgeon that sees that on a regular basis, that's really a diagnosis, a visual diagnosis.
A visual diagnosis. All right, so let's talk about managing endometriosis. You have your patient, you've been able to make the diagnosis, you have a firm diagnosis of endometriosis. What can the patient expect in terms of management?
Well, I'll tell you that it's something that we see a lot more of. I'm actually glad you asked that question because, you know, so many people in the past we saw just with symptoms. And, you know, now in our group, we actually are doing exactly what you just asked me, and that somebody's already made the diagnosis, and then, you know, what do we do to treat them? You know, again, you know, 5 years ago, there wasn't as many people getting diagnosed, and because of some pharmaceutical products and some things, you know, some awareness groups and so on and so forth, we've now started to see people are a little bit more adept to saying, hey, this could be endometriosis. So they may even be scoped or have a laparoscopy at that point and have the diagnosis. Then when I get involved is those people that are diagnosed with endometriosis, I treat them with a combination between medical therapy, which is some hormonal suppressive therapy, and then surgical excision. I believe that excision is the way to treat this disease. And that doesn't necessarily require us to excise the uterus. I'm talking about the endometriosis disease itself. So we actually go into the pelvis, but we do that robotically. You can do it laparoscopically, or you can even do it through an open incision. But it's best done robotically because we have better vision.
And this is surgery.
Surgery, yeah, better clarity, and we have more precise instrumentation. And so what we do is we actually take the endometriosis areas and we isolate those areas and then resect or actually remove that endometriosis-infected tissue and leave the normal tissue behind. It's very difficult surgery because there's a lot of things that run in the pelvis. There's a lot of blood vessels that go through the pelvis. There's a lot of nerves that go through the pelvis. And there's tubes that go from your kidney to your bladder, as well as the rectal wall. So endometriosis can affect all of those surfaces. So it's very important that we're very precise in our dissection so that we don't injure the other structures. That's why you can't just burn it. Like people have talked so many years, well, I had my endometriosis burnt out or whatever. You can't do that because what happens is in order to burn it adequately, you might burn the tissue underneath. So the areas that are maybe the most sensitive, that are causing the most pain, the doctors leave alone. And that's, you know, out of deference to the patient. They don't want to cauterize something or burn something with a laser that could potentially cause the patient an injury. So they leave those segments there. Unfortunately, that doesn't help the patient as much as they need to be helped.
And what can the patient expect in terms of recovery after having that kind of surgery?
The nice thing about when we do it robotically is that you can expect a recovery that's, you know, within a week you're back to your normal self, and within 2 weeks you're pretty much back to doing everything that you would normally do. In many cases, people go back to work in 2-3 days. I mean, it's not much different than a standard laparoscopy. We only make small incisions that are far less than a half an inch in diameter. And we're able to get put little tape strips on, and we can do this as either an outpatient or an inpatient, depending on the patient's insurance.
So you said earlier that, again, 1 in 10 women could possibly end up with an endometriosis diagnosis. We're looking at the women in the age group of 15 to 49, right in those childbearing years.
For sure.
So what does this mean for childbearing in terms of you go through a surgery, you have surgery? What can women still get pregnant if they get this diagnosis of endometriosis?
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, you know, we have a large obstetrical practice, and in our practice at any given time, we have quite a few ladies that I saw for complicated endometriosis that have gotten pregnant. And that's kind of a spurhead into, you know, our OB practice in many cases, because, you know, these are patients that didn't even think they were going to get pregnant. And in many cases, I'll see a patient who's not even contemplating pregnancy because she's tried for 6 or 7 years. So she's maybe in her early 30s. And she's like, I'm not worried about pregnancy. They're thinking that they are coming in to get a hysterectomy so that they can get their pain gone. And by the time we're done, we resect out the endometriosis. We didn't need to do a hysterectomy. And then guess what? They get pregnant.
And was that the way it used to be? Women would get hysterectomies?
So many past. And you know, in many cases, it didn't work. Because if you did a hysterectomy alone and you left the ovaries intact and there was still endometriosis, in many cases, the pelvis was worse than when you began because you got scarring from the hysterectomy because we, you know, at that time did it through open incisions. And that causes more scarring. So, you know, the advent of doing robotic excision has really changed therapy completely. And we're getting new medications over time to use and different instrumentation even with the robot. So it's all exciting times.
And again, so a diagnosis of endometriosis does not mean that you have to have a hysterectomy. It means that there is treatment perhaps in your future and even pregnancy if that's your ultimate goal.
Yeah, I mean, if you were going to summarize, you could say, you know, back in the day, you know, 20 years ago, when you got a diagnosis of endometriosis, you know, it was a tough diagnosis.
Yes.
Moving forward. And you really waited to menopause until you could get any relief of your symptoms. Now, it's definitely a very treatable disease. And in most cases, people do very, very, very well.
Dr. Zaden, when we come back, we have the pleasure of talking to one of your patients who's been treated for endometriosis, and we're going to do that when we come back on the Healthy Woman Show here on WJR. As always, Dr. Zaden, it's such a pleasure to have one of the patients from Women's Excellence join us on the show because they've walked the walk, they've lived this this diagnosis of endometriosis.
Well, it's a great to have this guest because she came to me with a almost like a special announcement for her 3-month follow-up visit. So, you know, I think we should introduce.
Kelly is joining us. Hi, Kelly. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're great. Kelly, tell us, what brought you to Women's Excellence and Dr. Jonathan Zaden? I know there was a very specific reason you went to that practice.
There was. I had seen a few doctors, and nobody could really tell me what was wrong, why me and my husband couldn't conceive. And I went to multiple doctors, and then I was researching, and I found Women's Excellence, and I said, I'm going to go. And I went, and they said, we're going to do this. And then I was on a treatment course for 6 months, and then we did surgery. He found out what was wrong. I went in for my 3-month follow-up, and I gave him some of the best news of my life.
And what's that news?
As of tomorrow, I will be 12 weeks pregnant.
Yes. Congratulations. That's such wonderful news. And that was your goal, right?
That was my goal. That and to figure out why I was in so much pain all the time.
Ah, there you go. So let's go back to that part of the story for a minute, because we know how this ends up, that you're pregnant, and that's, of course, the wonderful part of the news. But what when you went to Dr. Zaden's office, to Women's Excellence, you were in a lot of pain, and Dr. Zaden was just talking to us about all the symptoms of endometriosis. But how bad was that for you?
There were some days where I didn't want to move. I didn't want to function because I hurt everywhere. And people automatically assume that endometriosis is all in the reproductive region. That's the only place you feel pain. I felt it everywhere. Like, my body just hurt. I couldn't function a lot during the day.
Yeah, I talked about this earlier in the show, where I said, you know, people, they have this chronic inflammation. They're fighting. And so they just always feel tired, and they just feel bloated. And
like you have the flu almost, because that's how you feel when you have the flu.
Never,
just hurt all over.
They never feel great, right?
Yeah.
They feel okay, and they're getting through it, even in times when they're not in major pain. Is that how you felt, Kelly?
It was, and I do massages for a living. I'm a massage therapist, and I was going to work in massive amounts of pain, and I was on my feet for hours upon hours during the day. And I would come home and I would just cry because I didn't know what else to do. I was tired of taking medicines that weren't working. I blew through heating pad after heating pad after heating pad, and nothing, and no doctor really wanted to listen to me and be like, okay, we're going to figure out what's wrong with you. They wanted to push medicines on me, and I don't want to take medicines for the rest of my life.
How old were you when this first started to bother you?
I was in my mid to late 20s, and then I was 30 when I finally had a doctor start listening to me. But he did my first surgery to determine that I had endometriosis, and then he wanted to push more medicines on me.
Ah.
He said, this will make you feel better. This will help. And I said, I want an answer that doesn't involve medicine. So like I said, I did research after research, and I said, I will drive to another state if I have to. And instead, I found Dr. Zaden's office, and I drove an hour, and it was more than worth it. I couldn't have found a better doctor to help me.
And Marie, the thing was with Kelly was that we knew that she wanted to get pregnant. So, putting her on medication long-term or hormonal suppressants wasn't an option because most of those are going to be fertility interruptive, right? So you can't, if you're not ovulating and you're not producing estrogen, you're not going to achieve the goal of fertility and ultimately a child. So we, at that point we were kind of necessitated towards moving towards surgical intervention. So we actually provided her some hormonal suppression for a small amount of time just to kind of calm the inflammation down. And then we did a robotic resection on her.
So talk a little bit about the surgery. I mean, you knew you had endometriosis when you got there, but you weren't happy with other doctors and what they told you about treatment. So you found Women's Excellence and Dr. Zaden. So tell me what the surgery was like and the follow-up treatment after that. Did it lay you up for a while?
That surgery, I was only out for a week, and that surgery was so much easier than my first. After my first one, I was in so much pain still, and I had the second one with Dr. Zaden, and that was my first overnight stay in a hospital, and I had the normal amount of pain. When you have something like that done, you're going to have pain. But after I healed, I felt 1,000 times better.
And it sounds like you felt overall better, like it wasn't just the run-of-the-mill surgery pain that you may or may not have. You felt better.
I did. I felt, as funny as it sounds, I felt like a whole new person because I had an answer. I had somebody who listened to me and helped me and didn't want to just say, okay, we'll try this and see if it works, and if not, we'll try this. No, he listened to me. I don't want to say he fixed me, but he did. He made me feel like I was a new person, and he just listened. And that's what I wanted. I wanted a doctor to listen to me.
I have to tell you, it was a pretty emotional day when you came in. I mean, to come in to tell me that. I mean, obviously, you didn't have to do that, and it's. I mean, honestly, that's the best feeling ever when you actually make a difference as a physician. That's like the whole thing, right? That's what we strive for. So, I can't thank you enough for being able to, provide you that care. And, I always think that, and I say it all the time, relationships are only good if they're win-win. And this was certainly a win-win.
Absolutely, in a big way. Kelly, what have people around you told you? Has your husband noticed a difference in you?
He has. Before my surgery, I was always, I guess, sad in a way, and I always kind of felt like it was my fault that we weren't conceiving, and he would always notice that my mood was always down, and now, even before I got pregnant, I was happier, and my mood was just totally different, and everybody has said that, and I said, I'm not in pain. I don't feel tired. I don't feel drained every day now.
And I think that's what contributes, we said this again in the earlier segment of the show, it's what contributes to people getting that diagnosis of kind of being that whiner or somebody that they really can't take care of, because they're so frustrated that when they go to the next doc, they talk about what's going on, and the first thing that doctor hears is, well, nobody else has been able to help her. And, but it's really just a function of, at some point, the patients just feel like, am I ever going to get better? Like, I mean, I don't feel like everyone else does, and nobody seems to believe me, And I think that, you're hearing that from Kelly. We hear that a lot of times. You asked me that question earlier, about, how do people feel? And that's how they feel.
Dr. Zaden, we've done this, talked about this before. We've had other patients on who've dealt with the endometriosis. And I'm hearing it from Kelly, and I heard it from the other patients, that whole thing about no one was listening to me. And how frustrating. And, Kelly's talking about, frankly, feeling depressed, and how that really is another sidebar issue of all this. When nobody believes you that you're sick, you can be depressed.
Well, I mean, when you don't feel good and, you're spending all your energy, I say this all the time, just trying to get through your day, I mean, that's not an exciting life, right? And so people don't realize that, so they don't know how much more effort you are. Imagine if if every day, instead of doing your normal day, you had to tack on like, you know, 3 or 4 more hours to it of your workday, right? You'd be tired, right? Well, if you're fighting inflammation, it's like tacking on another 4 hours to your day, right, Kelly? I mean, it's like you feel like you worked a 12-hour day as opposed to an 8-hour day. And you know, and your body can only take so much, right? So you keep giving more and more and more just to keep up your normal schedule until finally you end up, you know, finding somebody that can help you.
Well, Kelly, we were so thrilled that you could join us today, but the best part of the whole story is that you're expecting and that you reached your goal and also that you're just feeling so, so much better.
Yeah, that was, like I said, that was my ultimate goal. Ultimate goal was to feel better. That was always the goal. And then the next goal was to get pregnant. And thanks to Dr. Zaden, and all the people in his office are amazing. But because of him and the surgery, it happened. So,
well, I'm really
I couldn't be more thankful for Dr. Zaden.
I'm really humbled to hear that, but I'm so glad that you know, that somehow I'm part of a, you know, a machine that can help help people like yourself. So thank you for being on the show.
And thank you, Kelly. And please stay well. We'll want to be back in touch when this baby shows its face to the world. Thanks for joining us today, Kelly.
Thank you.
Healthy Woman Show continues here on WJR. Dr. Zaden, we just had such a great conversation with Kelly and talking about her diagnosis with endometriosis and her being pregnant, which is, of course, great news. So
I'm telling you what, that was quite a visit. Yeah. And when she came in, that was something.
So happy about that. But we want to dedicate just a little bit of time also to colorectal cancer. This March is Colorectal Awareness Month, and we want to make sure we spend just a few minutes on that. Can we talk about screening for colorectal cancer? What happens in a screening for that?
Well, I mean, I think the first level of screening is, you know, and you know, it varies depending on what society you read, but, you know, it either starts at 45 or 50. And then typically you should get fecal occult blood testing, and that, even for different societies, are every 1 to 2 years. And nobody likes to talk anything fecal, right? So once you hear that term, you're done. But, you know, literally it can be just with a quick exam and then a small thing in the office where we just develop something in our back room. You know, we're not at Women's Excellence. We do, you know, we do the exam and then evaluate it in real time almost. So by the end of the day, we know the answer. But you can also send things in through the mail. I just find that people don't typically like to send that type of material.
I use that instead of fecal,
but through the mail. So that's you know, the hallmarks of screening. And then, of course, the colonoscopy. You know, most societies recommend your first colonoscopy, again, at either 45 or 50, and then every 5 to 10 years, depending. And then the other issue that has really come up is that screening, you know, cancer genetic testing. You know, we've talked about that on this show before, where, you know, we've got better abilities to identify those people who are at higher risk. And so, you know, there are definite advantages to getting genetic tested, especially if you have a family history, because then you can screen at more frequent intervals, right? And then you would find the disease earlier. And in colon cancer, truly, the earlier you find the disease, the better your outcome will be.
A colorectal versus gynecological symptoms. When people come into your office, what are some of the symptoms that they display? You know, I also should say, this disease affects what, one in 24 women?
Yeah, it's somewhere in that range. Yeah. I mean, every time I read it, it's 1 in 30, 1 in 20.
So they might present to you, though, in your office first, long before they would go to an internist or something.
All the time I say, you know, as a gynecologist, I am no internist, because the internists, I have so much respect for internal medicine and family practice doctors, because they do such a great job identifying a lot of different symptoms, and at least, you know, being the triage agent, and in many cases, the diagnostic physician, right? They find out what's wrong, and then they send the patient to us as specialists. And I always say, you know, as specialists, we definitely get an easier track at it, right? So, you know, we kind of sometimes have a diagnosis already, and, you know, and that's a lot easier to handle than when you don't have a diagnosis. But, you know, if you have a hereditary cancer genetic test, it allows you to get screened much more frequently, and your insurance company will cover it. So I think that, you know, doing your fecal occult blood testing, doing your colonoscopies as needed, and, you know, obviously coming in if you ever have any rectal bleeding, and then, you know, being tested to determine whether or not you should do your colonoscopies or fecal occult blood testing at more frequent intervals. I mean, if you do those things, that's about all you can do.
What are some of the symptoms that women need to watch out for?
You know, mainly abdominal bloating and really rectal bleeding. So anytime that you're getting blood in the stool, you should be evaluated. And I think, you know, so many times I hear from people that have had, you know, colon cancer that they had bleeding for, you know, up to a year before they were evaluated. And I think that two things happen. The first one is they always think that, you know, it's the first time that it happens, so they're not really worried about it. Number two, the bleeding isn't always like, it doesn't start like, you know, January 1st and then bleed every day all the way through.
It's kind of intermittent.
It's intermittent. So okay. So they, you know, they were worried about it for a day and then it went away and it didn't come back for 2 or 3 weeks. And then it went away again. So, you know, there's that time. And then people are busy. We've talked about this show on the show before, I think at one of our last episodes. And, you know, people are really busy. So that's one thing. And then there's the fear and denial. And then the whole thought of, you know, many people don't want to get a colonoscopy, right? And so the nice thing is that, you know, if you have rectal bleeding at all, go in and get evaluated first, because don't just assume, and this was going to be the last thing I was going to say, that it's a hemorrhoid, because that's what everyone always tells me. I just assumed it was my hemorrhoids, and that's what I attributed it to. You can't make that assumption. You have to go in and get evaluated. And now they're coming up with more virtual ways of doing colonoscopies and things like that that, you know, we're far better at. And, you know, we have better imaging and so forth. So even people who are afraid of having a colonoscopy, you know, there's other ways that we can look into those patients.
And so the best thing to do is that if you show any of those signs or symptoms, first of all, you said was a genetic link, that if anyone in your family member and then you start to exhibit, let's say, abdominal bloating or discomfort, maybe bleeding, rectal bleeding, those are all things that you really have to talk to the doctor
Yeah,
about.
Sure. I mean, I see people that, you know, have been anemic and they're not having menstrual cycles and they've attributed it to their gynecologic tract because they did that when they were 35. So unexplained anemia, if they have unexplained weight loss and they can't figure out why that's happening, that's another reason.
You know, we want to bring in one of our favorite people on the show, Jessica Rosetta, is joining us. She's a patient outreach coordinator for Women's Excellence. Dr. Zaden, your right-hand person, as you like to always say. And with all the talk we've had today, Jessica, about endometriosis and the screening for that and colorectal cancer and screening for that, people want to know, how can this be made easy? How can we make appointments? And I know that's something you're very proud of at Women's Excellence, and your technology and how you interface with your patients that way.
Yeah, of course. We've spent a lot of time on our website, so that's first step. Come to our website, and there's a lot of educational materials on there, but there's a lot of communication methods, and we're trying to be modern with that, and we're trying to come out with ways that you want to talk to us, you know, not just one way anymore by phone call. Our website is www.womensexcellence.com.
Jessica Rousset, thank you so much for joining us today. And always a pleasure, Dr. Zaden. Women's Excellence, number one, thank you so much for talking with us again today.
It's an absolute pleasure.
You've been listening to The Healthy Woman Show here on WJR. We'll see you again next month.
The Healthy Woman Show has been presented by Women's Excellence.